The footage in this documentary was recorded by Irishmen serving in the British Army while in Afghanistan. Helmand Province, 2010. The British Army are involved in a gun battle with the Taliban. This is Operation Black Winter. Two soldiers are pinned behind a compound wall. Watch where I'm firing, he says to Jonty.
Right there.
He points out the correct position of the gunman. This is what the British Army euphemistically calls contact.
More ammo!
Right, more ammo!
And ammo! No ammo, more ammo! Fine, see?
Right now, get the 66 out.
The soldier asks for the 66. The 66 is a one-shot disposable rocket launcher. It is used to clear bunkers or buildings. You can hear the rumble of bombing in the distance. The officer fires the 66 rocket launcher.
Right, where's my air defense?
There.
Yeah, I mean this. Hang on, get him away.
Don't move, Joey, all right?
You're dead on.
The firing from the Taliban seems to have stopped. In recent years, there have been record numbers from the Republic of Ireland joining up to the British Armed Forces. The highest rate since the Second World War.
Me and Park just wrote in.
My name is Sergeant Joe Kine from 1st Battalion Royal Irish. I'm from Newbridge, County Kildare.
Lieutenant Paddy Pratt, 1st Battalion Royal Irish Regiment, born and bred in Limerick.
Ranger Rob, Dublin.
Ranger Michael Carroll from Nason, Kildare.
Ranger Gargan, Dublin.
Ranger Hegarty from County Cork.
You may be wondering why some Irish people choose to be here in Helmand Province, Afghanistan.
Prepare to move!
Prepare to move!
They're fucking bringing that back.
A Witchcraft 4-5 Alpha. Grid 4-1 Romeo Papa 1-7-1-5.
After a gun battle, the Royal Irish are calling for air assistance.
Screening friendly movement. Smoke.
Parents would be pretty committed hippies. they were supportive, you know. They were in that sort of way. They were supportive because they knew it was what I wanted to do, and I was dead set on it, and I'd been dead set on it since I was about 17. On the other hand, yeah, of course, they were wary. One of the interesting things I remember when I graduated from Sandhurst, what my mother said was, the British military establishment then host a big lunch for the families and stuff like that, and my mother said sort of acerbically, we give them our sons and they give us lunch.
Is that 1715-9530?
Yeah, it's quite a way over.
Yeah, isn't it?
When I joined it was 1997, so it was, you know, Northern Ireland was in full flow at that stage. My only concern was, I mean, most of my interviews for the army were up in Ballymena. You could tell the difference. I mean, I just noticed going up on the train, you know, from Dublin to Belfast, and you could just tell the difference that I was entering an unknown place.
Witchcraft 4-5 Alpha. Just to confirm, I don't now need to play this through 4-2, do I? Over.
I was working as an apprentice electrician.
I was a debt collector.
Yeah, I was 19 when I joined the British Army. And done my leaving, started finished school, and worked on the buildings for a year and a half.
Always wanted to be in the army.
Always wanted to be in the army ever since I was a kid.
Something I always wanted to do. Went for the Irish Army as well.
I did try and get into the Irish Army, but they weren't recruiting at the time.
I applied for the Irish Army, but I was colourblind, so I couldn't get in.
Yeah, I just didn't get in the first time. They told me to come back, but...
The Irish Army doesn't do, like, a combat tour of Afghanistan or anything. So I said I might as well join the British Army and get a combat tour, like.
You prefer to go to Afghan anyway, so better off coming over here.
Witchcraft 4-5 Alpha, Roger, out. Matt, just let Joe know that we're waiting for airspace clear now.
Okay.
He's working as fast as he can.
After a break in the gun battle, the soldiers are still waiting in a clearing for orders.
There we go. We'll drop one, end it.
In terms of security issues, like, you need, as I said, you do need to have your head screwed on, so, and when you come home and stuff like that, and who you tell. But as the peace process was obviously gathering steam, it became less and less a threat. I know it's like a change now with the dissidents and stuff like that, and I'd say the guys need to be careful.
Those that don't know I'm in the army and they ask where you've been, haven't seen you, then not because of political or anything like that, just let them know I'm just working on the buildings over in England, you know, stuff like that. So it's just not this advertise myself.
Oh, Witchcraft 4-5 Alpha, shot out. Right, rounds in air.
They're moving.
The Taliban, who they have been fighting, are moving. The British Army fires smoke grenades at their position. They receive a radio dispatch that the Taliban are getting ready to attack. They take position and wait.
Right, Acorn Susan, they're getting ready to fire.
Witchcraft 4-5 Alpha. Yeah, smoke's effective. So, yeah, we'll keep up with that rate, over.
And then it kicks off. The gun battle will last 5 minutes.
Oh, fuck me!
Nice.
Start their deployment to Afghanistan. The battalion will spend the next 6 months in central Helmand at Nadali, the focus of Operation Moshtarak earlier in the year. Putting the finishing touches to their training, these Irish soldiers will over the next month head into theatre. It's the biggest battle group the Royal Irish Regiment has been part of since Korea.
It's one of the worst things I've ever done in my life. In Dublin Airport, when they send goodbye to my friends and family, my girlfriend as well. It wasn't enjoyable.
She got married just like about a month before we went as well, so that was a bit crap going away straight away.
I had a mixed feeling of excitement, fear, all this emotion built up.
It's like a week off, and I was walking behind the jet at the engine of the plane. You know, like back, you go off and you can feel the heat. I'd walk past it and fuck, it's a big jet engine, like, oh fuck, it's not, it's the heat, like, oh my god.
I never really thought about it at the time, but when I got over there, like, I didn't make contact for the first month I was out on the ground, and because so much things going on, you know. And then when I contacted my mum, it was like, why didn't you contact me? You know what I mean? And all that. So, you wanted to ring me every day from now on.
Irish mammy.
Yeah.
5 minutes on, and the gunfight continues.
Come on, let's go, let's go! Keep firing, lads!
As soon as it begins, it stops.
Yeah.
The platoon make their way back to camp.
Battle Group has mounted the regiment's largest air assault since 1945. The operation was carried out in Afghanistan last month, but the Ministry of Defence has only just released the details.
The UK's biggest heli-borne operation for a year saw 11 troop-carrying aircraft plus gunships and jets taking off from Camp Bastion at first light to seize what had been a Taliban stronghold.
That's 3-1 Bravo, Roger. Reference to your compound 7, just south of that. You're looking at compound 14.
Okay, so a typical day, well, you'd wake up, because the Afghan daylight is basically sort of from about 7 till 5 consistently because of its geographic location.
We operated throughout the winter when temperatures would go down to minus 15 and you're trying to get up out of your sleeping bag in a basic cot bed.
Life out there, it's in isolated checkpoints, operating from them checkpoints and living harsh, quite harsh.
Very basic, you know, because it was that dangerous out there, getting resupply. You know, there's no fresh food. It's all 24-hour rations.
Okay, we're going to move. We're going to move. Okay.
Watch out.
Fair to move.
Then you'd shuffle to the kitchen, and when we first arrived, the conditions were pretty basic, and you were fed like food, like in 30 degree heat, even at that time, like hot porridge, which is practically inedible.
You know, you get a quick brew, and then you're out in patrol.
Keep moving!
The guys would be well drilled. They get themselves together half an hour before you go out. You load up, you know, you put on your kit, your helmet, your heavy equipment. So you're carrying about 30 kilos of stuff, including your body armor and the radios and the magazines, and then your 4 liters of water. And different guys will be carrying more than that with their rocket launchers and their machine gun bullets and their heavy machine guns. And you would saddle up and go out the door.
Your hands are freezing, you're going through canals, so your boots are soaking wet for the rest of the day, your clothes are completely saturated.
And at that time, like, you know, Sangin was a busy enough town with about 17,000 people, so you can imagine, like, it's like going to patrol Wicklow or something like that, straight out into it, and you don't know what the threat is, and who you've heard, maybe intelligence reports, there's suicide bombers on bikes, there's IEDs, which are the hidden bombs in the ground. There might be snipers. There's always these things called dickers, which are guys watching you and sort of talking on mobile phones. Or are they just normal, just talking on mobile phones? How do you know?
There they are. Some guys in the back.
Okay,
keep going. Let's go. Keep going.
Let's go, boys.
Then you'd go through the town, which would be dusty and busy and past a bazaar, and then out into patrol where you're into the green zone, where it's sort of more irrigated and there's green life everywhere and, you know, fields and little irrigation ditches. Could be out for 3 hours generally, I'd say, and you do about 2K because you're moving so slowly and tactically. And then you've got like 50 degree heat.
It's freezing.
Fucking cold. Yeah,
absolutely freezing.
And when it rained, it fucking pissed, like, really. Like, I've never seen rain like that in Ireland before. Yeah. It's pissed.
Yeah, over Christmas in January as well, it was freezing. And I think, like, it was probably colder at home, but obviously you're living in tents and stuff and you're constantly outside, so you notice it a lot more.
But in the winter, they plant the IEDs, you know, in the winter, because they don't like fighting the cold, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. We found a good few IEDs as well out there, you know, during the months of December and January. There could be command pullovers. They'd have some man sitting on the end of a string and he'd pull it.
There's loads of different ways. Pressure plates,
yeah.
RC, it doesn't really work anymore.
interacting with locals every day. You know, when you arrive, they don't know you, you don't know them. There's that initial tentative, you know, they're reluctant to come and talk to you because they might not necessarily trust you. So it's building up those relationships, talking to the locals.
You might try and sort of win them over with some quick impact projects, like talk to the local mullah, ask him does he want some carpets for his mosque, does he need lighting, does he need speakers, we'll provide it to him, try and win him over, we know he's a power broker, that kind of thing. And then, yeah, swing back if you haven't been contacted or blown up. You swing back and get back into what was like the district centre or base, the DC. You have a debrief, talk about what you've done, what could you do better, did anyone notice anything, you know, that kind of thing, and then you'd probably move on to get some grub.
You get great of, like, you make pizzas and stuff. The Afghans taught us how to make bread, and like you could buy some like spuds and stuff off them, and like flour for bread, made a little oven, and
you can buy like cans of Pepsi and stuff off the locals and Mirinda and Mountain Dew and stuff.
Same again the next day.
To be honest, it's just boring. Like, a lot of times boring. Spend a lot of time on guard duty and doing patrols and stuff, and then it's can be quite boring. Like.
You go on, you say, two patrols in a day. In between, you've got to provide security for the checkpoints and stuff like that. And then at night time, you're providing security at night time for the exact same. So day and night, it's the same. You mean, it's 24 hours a day. You mean, there's probably occasions where you mightn't get sleep for 2 days.
When you're in Afghanistan, all you have is the lads that are there with you, and you miss home. And it's the same as if you go away travelling, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And it's always when you touch back down home, you know that you're home because it is home. So if you can bring a piece of home out with you, then you will. But it's the same as anything. If I had my Limerick flag with me, one of my Rangers had his Tipperary flag, and Limerick beat Tip in the league earlier on in the year, and I slagged the arse out of him for 3 weeks because of it. But you know, that's the way it is. But it's taking a piece of home out there with you. You know, nobody, just because you've joined the British Army, it doesn't mean that you've forgotten who you are or where you come from. You know, and there's still a lot of pride for that.
Sam come down the road in uniform, and I looked at him, and I was like, you know, I'm from somewhere, and he said the same to me. We stopped, started talking. He was in school, same school as me, and everyone didn't even know. I'd be 2 years ahead of him in school, so I would have recognised him, played football with him and stuff.
I flew my tricolour when I was in my PB in Afghanistan.
A lot of them had like just different flags up where people are from, so you have British flags and Northern Irish flags and tricolour and that. People have county flags and everything.
The main day is Paddy's Day. Party atmosphere, you wake up in the morning, you go round to the soldiers, if you're an officer, you go round to the soldiers and at 6 o'clock in the morning, you wake them up with the bagpipes, the piper waking them up, playing the bagpipes, and you go around giving them tea with whiskey in it, with Jameson in it. So that's how you start the day. Then you go back and have breakfast with a bit of green champagne. Then there's like a chariot race where the soldiers get to throw all eggs and flour and all that kind of stuff at you, and it's all just good crack. And then you have a parade, and then obviously there's a good few drinks after the parade.
It's when the Ireland and England rugby match was on, that was good cracking. We all the Northern Irish lads and Republic lads got together, and we were slagging the shit out of all the lads from England.
I'll tell you what we're seeing a lot of is the Irish rebel tunes, which is kind of a juxtaposition, being in the British Army. But like when the pub, were in the messes and stuff, you know, when everyone's had a few beers, the old Dubliners would come out and all that kind of stuff, the Wolf Tones and new name. So it really is kind of a weird existence when you're sitting in a British Army base, drinking beers, listening to the Wolf Tones, you know.
The Rangers are located in a remote part of Helmand Province. Weekly supplies are airlifted by a Chinook helicopter. they record its arrival.
First contact, you shit yourself, and I don't care what anyone says, you fucking shit yourself, and then after you're like, holy fuck, you just get up and start returning fire. And then
I remember my first contact was the very first patrol we went out on, as a Royal Irish. We had gotten to 300 metres outside our checkpoint, and then from about 300 metres further to our west, we were engaged with rounds. It was about 10 rounds fired at us. We were in an irrigation ditch, jumped into the irrigation ditch, soaking from top to bottom. The Taliban effectively just started moving away, so we then started moving as well to try and see where they were going.
We were in a compound there. We got contacted, and one of my mates was firing through like a really thin metal door, and we could see them running past, and he was firing through the door at them.
We were sort of creeping around in an orchard, if you imagine kind of what heavily irrigated pomegranate and apple orchard. So it was beautiful and sort of speck of light everywhere, and we were creeping around very covertly, and a small number of us, and this guy just walked out. We were in a Taliban area, and this guy just walked out with a brown dish dash, black turban on, big beard, brown eyes, and I was the front guy just at this stage, and he just stared at me with utter hatred, and I stared at him with utter hatred, and it was interesting because we just stared at each other, and I was saying sort of, I know you're Taliban, and he was saying, I know you, you know I'm Taliban, and then he was saying, but I know you can't do anything because I don't have a weapon, and I was like, yeah, whatever, and he walked off.
At the checkpoint you've been saying, and you can tell, like, you know, they know, and you know, and you can, there's nothing you can do about it, like. You can tell when they look at you, like, some of the ones that hate you and the ones that don't really give a crap, like.
At the start of the tour, the crops were high, so you know what I mean? It was hard for the Taliban to see it. So then, I think it was 2 months into the tour, then, I don't know, I think the farmers ploughed all the fields, and they could just see for miles and miles, mm-hmm. You know? So you were out in the open.
Tango 1, rapid fire!
Tango 1, rapid fire is the call.
Rapid fire. Yeah.
Another contact. Wait is the call. An Irish accent can be heard. Let them in first to get a gap. Helicopters fly overhead.
It had been raining all day. We went out on patrol. We were going out onto a route, clearing a route that the Taliban had used quite regularly. As we were walking up, the front man had noticed some disturbance on the ground before, about 30 metres in front of him. We went firm to have a look at it, and next thing he noticed some branches off to his right-hand side moving as well. It turned out to be a command to pull IED. Because it had been raining that day, the IED never went off, but the detonators went off. If that IED had gone off, he would have been seriously injured, if not killed. The second man would have been seriously injured, and then I was right behind them.
Just see the rounds bouncing in front of your feet, like, it's crazy, like, running across open ground, 200 metre sprint, and when I got to the far side, there was just the irrigation ditch, and lads were suppressing, giving us cover as we were across open ground. And as I got to the irrigation ditch, all I could do was just collapse into the ditch with exhaustion. It was crazy.
We fought for 13 hours in pretty much a pitch battle, where the Taliban weren't going to do their hit-and-run tactics. They were going to try to deny us the sort of any influence in the area to contest it, you know.
I had to put myself in a position where I knew the enemy was going to, you know, engage me. But so I'd done that, was in position, and for 3 hours I was in the contact, you know, fighting from that position. And then the reason it sticks out is because I was pinned down for 2 hours after that. I couldn't move, couldn't get up, couldn't move any of the troops around the ground.
The Royal Irish are engaged in a battle.
Let's go to the left. Yeah.
That is the hiss of a smoke grenade being launched.
Camera ready. Get the 66 out.
Get the 66 out.
It's a strap. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Watch your back. The battle continues.
What was it about, you know, the Hemingway quote? Anyone who thinks war isn't murder should ask the infantry, ask the dead. Basically, that was the point there. You know, it is a game, and when you really get the one up on your enemy, who has been trying to kill you, it is sweet. You know, that might sound absolutely barbaric to a lot of your listeners, but yeah, that's the way it is. They have been trying to kill you, and you know, a lot of people would say, like, you know, they wouldn't, this idea of killing, like, and it really annoyed me when I got home, because some of my best friends asked me, like, so did you kill anyone? Like, it was the worst thing in the world I could have ever done. But once you're out there, yeah, and some guy's shooting at you and your men and trying to kill them, and you get him first, good luck, you know.
The battle still continues.
Keep going!
Go on, keep going, he says. Since 2001, 394 British servicemen have been killed in Afghanistan. In 2011, 2,777 Afghans were killed during this conflict.
Yeah, me personally, on the two tours I've done, I've killed seven. But on four on the last tour and three on the previous one. But yeah, the closest one, 100 metres.
The round was coming in past your head, you know. You could just hear the cracking by your head, and you're just thinking, oh, Jesus, you know what I mean? Getting down, like, diving into the ditch. And
one of my mates was shot in the helmet. Yeah, right in the helmet, yeah. He was up on the roof, and a couple of us were downstairs, and heard like a really distinct change. You can tell like when rounds come over, and a really distinct change. And I was shouting up to him, asking, was he all right? And I couldn't hear it. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, I thought he'd been killed. After my mate was shot in the helmet, when I got up on the roof, they were turning fire. Yeah, I was thinking I was going to get it that day.
We killed one insurgent, and then another insurgent about 400 metres off out to our east engaged us again. We had POID'd him, but he had moved behind a compound, but there was an Apache in the air. We were able to direct him onto that insurgent, and then the Apache was able to take him out. So,
why did you? Yeah, I'm a sniper, yeah. Watch him from a sniper rifle when I hit him. I killed him, yeah, myself, yeah. A couple of them. Five.
It happens, you know, like when it happens, it's, you hear it on the radio, you know, and then, you know, when it comes across on the company conference calls and stuff, you hear stuff like that. You mean, it's sort of soul destroying at that point. But I mean, you tell the guys, and you mean, personally, I know Stevie McKee, and then when I heard that, I was like, I mean, this is, I mean, like, you know, you couldn't picture him being dead, you know, that sort of way. But
I was a platoon commander for Ranger Dalzell. He spent 4 months in my checkpoint. Dealing with that is the most difficult set of circumstances you'll ever deal with, whether it be a ranger or as a platoon commander, you know, telling his friends that he's no longer with us.
It's very hard to explain to your mates, you know, what you've seen, you know, because they want to understand the things, you know.
guys, prepare to move.
Ready to move?
Yeah.
Yeah, get yourself ready to go.
Rangers! Standards! Haste! Rangers! Rangers! Shot!
Shropshire, England, April 2011. The Royal Irish Regiment has been deployed home.
The Royal Irish Regiment are back home at their base at Turnhill in Shropshire after a grueling 6 months in Afghanistan.
Their tour of duty has finished.
Cheers rang through Market Drayton yesterday to welcome home the Royal Irish Regiment. Thousands lined the route as the soldiers made their way to St Mary's Church for a service of thanksgiving.
They will soon be going home to Ireland and holidays. Paddy and Joe go for a cigarette.
You don't cigarettes, John?
Hmm?
You don't smoke?
Yeah.
Bore the tears out of me some days listening to Haji Lal Jam. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
Do you remember the day of the really bad thunderstorm and there was hailstones?
Yeah.
Hailstones came down. And was it Azadi who was contacted?
Could have been, yeah.
But we were only about 300 metres away. But we couldn't see 10 metres in front of us. Yeah. We didn't know what the hell was going on. And then as we were moving back, we were about a K away, and then on Bath we saw a vehicle coming down, which were there. That's fucking them. That's fucking.
Yeah.
Had a nice tan coming back as well. Got really hot like the last 2 weeks we were coming home, you know.
Cheaper nights out afterwards as well, the old alcohol tolerance is down.
Yeah.
Probably pissed on 2 points.
Oh, that's it, yeah, yeah.
Three cans of those.
Cyprus took me, like, 2 cans of those. That's
you have to go to Cyprus, yeah.
Yeah,
but you have to go to decompression in there for 36 hours or 24 hours.
24 hours, yeah.
They bring you back to Cyprus just to have a chat with you.
Just chill out.
Just chill out.
Just chill out. They bring you to the beach to give you
swimming
activities to do.
Banana boating and
yeah,
ice cream and so all the stuff
yeah.
that you didn't have. Do you get some cans that night and comedy gigs? And
so that means you have that there. So that means if you come home, that you won't go to, you know, on the piss straight away and then go rogue altogether, you know?
Mm.
There will be security briefings for people going home and stuff as well, and obviously some things they have to bear in mind. Telling people at home and that, but around the camp it's obviously very secure, so it's not really something you worry about. Bit of advice not to, you know, don't tell people you don't need to tell.
And stuff like that. And don't be telling people you don't know you're there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, me and my brother, I mean, as I said, my brother was in Three Para, so he was out on the ground as well. So he was in north of Nad Ali, where we were. So, I mean, at the same time, he's still out there at the moment now and coming back in a few days. But me and him, you know, we're serving out in Afghanistan at the same time, and it's not the first time. So the last tour, we've done the exact same as well. I rang home once from Afghanistan, and he was home on R&R. So I got to speak to him then, and I said, how's everything? And I got a letter from him once, but that's it now. So I'm looking forward to sort of seeing him when he comes home. We have a chat of what he's done, what I've done, and all that stuff.
I'm going to Thailand on Sunday.
How long?
16 days. I can't wait. Over to Pattaya, Phuket, to all the islands.
Very nice.
Full moon parties, I can't wait. All the lady boys. Can't wait. Can't wait.
And,
I'll be class.
Holy show, your mother now.
Aye. Just myself and one of the lads.
Yeah.
I know he's from the north. Yeah.
Alright,
yeah.
Good.
One of the good mates.
I'm just going to take it easy. Go back, see my girlfriend. It's the first thing I'm going to do, and stay with her for a while. And it's just take it easy. It's see my family and my friends. And my friends are all eager to see pictures and videos and all that sort of thing and talk to me about it and stuff. So
yeah.
I'd say I'll just take it easy. I have no plans. I'll go on holidays in the summer now. It's
I came back from Sangin early, and I went to do a captain's course.
tactical awareness course, and they had the pilots come in to show us the effect of their weapon system. Thought it was like a fucking computer game, man. Really? And like, I've seen the effect of like the chunks of human flesh blown all over the remnants of, and yeah man, bombs away, and get a load of that, and that will ruin your day.
Yeah.
And you're like, you prick.
Everyone in my hometown knows. Everyone knows, yeah, just got out.
Well, I've only told myself, I've only told my a select few friends, you know, but I think that the less people know, the better, you know.
I never say anything, like, I never say what I do, like, just in case, because you don't know who you're going to meet there, so I keep it quiet. Like. I own bars, like, I can never tell them what I do, just makes them shut up. Like,
yeah.
To my carbon.
Friends and close family, but it's just no point in broadcasting it. You don't know.
But when it came down to it, I'm very clear in my head about my my heritage, my culture, my background. I'm very proud of it, but I wouldn't see that as something that should stop me from doing something that I enjoy doing, or something that I think I can make a difference in and inside the British Army.
So I see myself as Irish still. Like, still have an Irish passport and not a British citizen, so.
I'm 100%
Irish. 100%
Irish. Yeah.
I don't know why you'd even ask that question. Like, it's a job. It's just a job. Like, it's just a job.